An Osho Talk.
Yaku-san. Straight to the point of enlightenment.
Number 4.
When the novice monk Gao first called on Yaku-san, Yaku-san asked him, "Where do you come from?" Gao said, "From Nanyue." Yaku-san asked, "Where are you going?" Gao replied, "To Jiangling to receive the precepts." Yaku-san then asked, "What is the aim of receiving precepts?" Gao answered, "To escape birth and death." Yaku-san said, "There is someone who doesn't receive the precepts and has no birth and death to escape. Do you know?" Gao asked, "Then what is the use of the Buddha's precepts?" Yaku-san said, "This novice still has lips and teeth." At this, the novice bowed and withdrew. Dogo then came forward and stood by Yaku-san, who said to him, "That limping novice who just came, after all, has some life in him." Dogo said, "He's not to be entirely believed yet. You should test him again first." When evening came, Yaku-san went up into the hall. He called, "Where is the novice who came earlier?" Gao then came forward from the assembly and stood there, and Yaku-san said to him, "I hear that Chang'an is very noisy." Gao said, "My province is peaceful." Yaku-san asked with much joy, "Did you realize this from reading scriptures or from making inquiries?" To which Gao replied, "I did not get it from reading scriptures or from making inquiries." Yaku-san said, "Many people do not read scriptures or make inquiries. Why don't they get it?" Gao said, "I don't say they don't get it. It is just that they don't agree to take it up."
Friends, one sannyasin has asked that he has been to Dalai Lama, he has been to many Zen masters in Japan, but when he comes here, he feels perfectly at home. Why? Thinking about his problem, I remember a man went to the psychiatrist and said, "I'm feeling so happy. Why?" The psychiatrist was at a loss. He has seen miserable people, sick people, And he could have answered the why they are miserable and why they are in despair, why they are sad. But how to answer a man who asks, I am feeling very happy, why? Happiness has no cause. It simply arises in your being without any cause. If you feel at home here, this is your home. From where comes the question, why? But I can understand what you wanted to ask, but could not phrase it rightly. You have been to Dalai Lama. Dalai Lama is not enlightened. He has still the great desire to be the political head of Tibet. That desire is preventing his enlightenment. I feel sorry for him. A nice man. But any desire is going to become a tremendous obstacle. I had sent him the message that it is time you drop the very idea of being the political head of Tibet. He is in tremendous anguish. In this state he cannot become enlightened. If he drops the desire, the longing to be the political head of a country, perhaps as the desire disappears like smoke, he may see the light for the first time. He has not seen it yet. And moreover, even if he becomes enlightened, his language, his way of answering you will be out of date. He is too much learned in the Buddhist scriptures. He will repeat those scriptures and they are very ancient. They are no more contemporary. The same is the situation in Japan. You have been hearing me on Zen masters that creates a great desire in you to go to Japan. But don't go to Japan. You will be frustrated. While I am speaking on Zen masters, I am speaking in a way which is absolutely contemporary. You can understand it. They are still speaking the language of the past. It is a calamity that the so-called religious people get caught up in a certain moment in the history, then they don't progress from that place. The Buddhists are caught up with Gautama Buddha 25 centuries back. Everything has changed. But their ideology remains 25 centuries old. It does not ring bells in your heart. Hence you cannot feel at home. Never think for a moment that what I am saying about Zen has been said by Zen masters themselves. I am constantly improving, improvising. With me, religion is not something static. It is an evolutionary process. It grows like a tree, hundreds of feet high. It moves like a river, thousands of miles. Not for a single moment the move stops. Since eternity, rivers are moving and moving and moving. I am not a pond. And when you go to Japan, you will find ponds. I make every effort to make the ponds flow like a river. A pond knows nothing but death. It is dying every moment. The water is evaporating. Soon there will be just mud left. A river is always alive, singing and dancing and moving into the unknown territories without any map. Without any guidance, without a guide, just trusting in existence, it knows somewhere the ocean has to be. If the thirst for the ocean is in me, that is enough proof, enough evidence that somewhere the ocean is waiting for me. He has called me. Otherwise, why this thirst? Why this longing to meet, to the unlimited? Your thirst is a proof, an argument, a valid evidence. With me, nothing is static. That creates puzzle in many static minds. Because whatever I have said yesterday was yesterday. Today I am absolutely fresh and new. Even I don't know what I am going to say to you. When you will hear it, I will also hear it. You get puzzled, confused, that the other day you have been saying this and today you have changed completely. I go on improving on devices. I go on improving on parables, on stories. So you will find the same story told in different ways in my literature. Sometimes I take a different standpoint. Sometimes I look from it from a different angle. Sometimes I drop something out of it. It is not fitting to the moment. Sometimes I add something which I have never said before. And it is easy for me because I don't remember what I have said before. Otherwise, it will be difficult even for me, but it is not. Past is past. That which is gone is gone. I am just here to respond to your thirst. I don't care whether it is consistent with my past statements. I am still alive. Only dead people are consistent because they cannot change anything. They are under their grave. While living, if a person remains consistent, that means at some moment of time he dies. He is living a posthumous life, a ghost life. He is no more a reality. The reality has stopped at a certain point. Hippies used to say that don't believe anyone who is more than 30 years. I can see a certain truth in it. As a person becomes more experienced of the world, he becomes more and more cunning. The world is cunning. You have to face a cunning world, and the only way is to be more cunning than the others. You have to compete with all kinds of ugly people. You have to be harsh. You cannot remain nice, compassionate. As one becomes more and more experienced of the world, he is more and more corrupted. He loses his innocence. He has died. Most of the people die at the age of 30. And hippies themselves have given the proof. They all have died. What happened to the hippies? They simply disappeared. By the time they looked around the world, they saw that everybody is competitive. In this competitive world, you cannot survive. Now all the hippies are good managers in great corporations. They are now called with a new name, Yuppies. I have been searching for a hippie. There is no hippie anymore. Not that they all have died. They have all shaved their beards, dropped their ideology of being dirty. They have started taking showers. They have got married. They have forgotten all about great love affairs under the moon. Now they have their own houses, a small garden, a beautiful car, a wife, two or three children, a good job. Now they cannot afford the old style of being a hippie. They will be thrown from the office. Now they use ties, shoes. They have mixed with the rotten society that they have condemned before. But in a way, their old statement was right. Don't believe a man who is beyond 30. It is very rare to find a man who remains his whole life like a child, utterly innocent and uncorrupted by the world. When you come here, when you face me, you are facing a man who belongs to eternity, not to time. And eternity is your home, your eternal home, with me you will learn how to go on growing, how to go on flowing, how to go on with existence without bothering your mind and its consistencies, without bothering that this is contradictory to my yesterday. It has to be. If you are a living being, your today is going to contradict all your yesterdays. That means you are fully alive. Nothing has gone dead in you. People die partially, slowly, slowly. Nothing of life remains in them, then they become absolutely consistent. But don't listen to a man who is consistent, he is dead. Beware of it. Your feeling at home here simply means you have entered into the river which goes on flowing. It is always fresh, it never becomes dirty. It is always singing songs, and its waves go on dancing in the sun, in the moon. But it is always on the go. It was customary to Gautam Buddha, whenever somebody became enlightened, he was sent away to share his experience with those who are stumbling on the path. Obviously, those disciples who have become enlightened will ask him for his last message, that they can carry in their heart, and you will be surprised what was his last message to every disciple when he was departing from him. He will call the disciple close, so nobody else hears, because it was the same message. And in the ear of the disciple, he will say, always remember, Charevethi, Charevethi, go on, go on, never stop. Existence never stops. Why you should stop? Charevethi, Charevethi. Because it was always said into the ear in secrecy. Everybody wonder what is the last message, but you can get it only when you become enlightened. I give you even without enlightenment. Buddha was very miserly. Why wait for your enlightenment? Why not tell you the truth right now? Charevethi, Charevethi. Go on, flowing, flexible, at rest with existence. You have been to Dalai Lama, you may have been to other masters, they are great teachers. They are not masters. That's why you have not felt at home. Teachers don't have the charisma, the magnetic force, the Buddha field around them. They have only mere words, unlived, unexperienced. They have great scriptures with them. They are argumentative. They can convince you about a certain philosophy. I don't have any philosophy. Because existence has no philosophy at all. It has flowers, it has stars, it has rivers, it has oceans, mountains, but I have never come across that existence has any philosophy, any religion, any dogma, any theology, any creed, any cult. It is absolutely open and free. Every philosophy becomes an imprisonment. Every religion chains you, handcuffs you. Every cult and creed is poisonous. You must have come across the teachers, they are repulsive. They try in every way to attract you, and maybe for a small time you may be attracted by their great learning, but soon you will discover that learning is only paper thick. Inside the man is as ignorant, perhaps more ignorant than you are. Soon you will have to desert. Here we don't have any philosophy. Life is our philosophy, existence is our philosophy, to be in tune with the world, to be in harmony with the cosmos is our religion. And the whole existence is continuously following Charaveti, Charaveti. It goes on and on. There is no end and there is no beginning. Unless you find such a master, multidimensional, without beginning, without end, you will not feel at home. You will feel in the prison. Only the vast sky of a master can allow you to feel at home. Because the basic necessity of every consciousness is freedom. I teach you freedom. I share with you my freedom, my love, but without any conditions attached to it. I am just a well overflowing. If you are thirsty, you can drink. You need not even thank me. You don't owe anything to me, not even gratitude. I am already overflowing, whether anybody drinks of me or not. Even if you all disappear from the Gautam the Buddha auditorium, I will come every evening exactly 7 o'clock. And I will talk to my absent disciples. Just the other day I told Nirvana, because sometimes she gets late by 2 minutes, just the way of a lady. Never in time. I told her that this won't do. I have to be in time into my chair. Whether anybody is there or not does not matter. I will speak to the trees, to the bamboos. They are such a great listeners. Never interrupt. These people, the Dalai Lama and others, are fossils. They have died long ago. When I give my interpretation, remember always it is my interpretation. If I meet the master who has written the sutras, I know perfectly well there is no possibility of agreement. But because they are all dead, I am completely free to interpret them according to the times, not according to their creed. Their background was their background. Today that background does not exist. That world is no more there. Man's conscience has changed. man's conditionings have changed. Man is programmed in different ways. I have to deprogram the people whom I am facing. I am exactly in the moment. That's why you feel at home. But rejoice rather than being worried that why I am feeling at home, why I am happy. Just be happy. Happiness needs no cause. Only misery can be diagnosed, not happiness. Go to any doctor and ask him that I am feeling happy, diagnose it. As far as I know, nobody has been able up to now to diagnose happiness. Yes, diseases can be diagnosed and cured. Happiness cannot be diagnosed and neither it can be cured. Once you have got the fire, nobody can put it out. So it is perfectly okay, but I know the problem is, from your whole life you have never been okay. Something was always wrong. Somebody was always pointing that you are doing wrong, that you are behaving wrongly, that this is not the right etiquette. Some Confucius, some Manu, some Moses, some Muhammad was telling you how to behave, what is right and what is wrong. Somebody was deciding for you. This is the only place for the first time in the whole history where nobody is deciding for you what is right and what is wrong. My effort is to bring your consciousness to the highest peak so that it can decide on its own what is right and what is wrong. It may not be in agreement with Manu, 5,000 years old. It may not be in agreement with Moses. It may not be agreement with Muhammad. It will be only in agreement with existence and you. To me, religion is an individual love affair with existence. It has nothing to do with scriptures, nothing to do with knowledge, learning. That is all nonsense. But because you have become accustomed of being told that you are unworthy, undeserving, and you have accepted it. So when you come here in a total freedom, with no inhibitions, with no repressions, with nobody to tell you what to do and what not to do, you feel at a loss, just like a small child in a fair loses his mother's hand, feels at a loss where to go. You remain retarded because of these people who go on telling you what is right and what is wrong. They keep you in dependence, in slavery, And I have told you the greatest slavery is the spiritual slavery. And the whole humanity is living under spiritual slavery. I teach you the rebellion. Come out of the masses. Stand alone. Like a lion. And live your life according to your own light. Find the light and it will show you the path. The path that is shown by your own light is the only path that is right. What others have been telling may be right for them. It cannot be right for you. That's why I am not a moralist. I am not an immoralist. I am absolutely immoral. I don't consider morality or immorality at all. I am not a Puritan who creates guilt in you. Just the other day, the German scholar who has compared me with Jesus, he has a point. He seems to be a man of very keen intelligence. He says that I am far superior than Jesus, but I will not be able to found a religion. He is right. Why he says that? He says, because you go on teaching freedom. How can you found a religion? A religion is founded by the slaves. And to create slavery, there is a psychological device. First, create guilt. Once a person starts feeling guilty that he is doing something wrong, that he is undeserving, unworthy, then he is having a wound inside which will not heal, which will go on growing. He has a spiritual cancer in the name of guilt. But all the religions have been doing that spiritual cancer. Their purpose is when you feel guilty, undeserving, you lose your confidence. And you have to go to the priest to find confidence. You have to confess to the priest that you have been doing something wrong. That you have been having a love affair with somebody else's wife. Now you feel guilty. You cannot say to your wife, you cannot say to the husband of the wife you are in love. Where to go? It becomes a constant tension in you. You are hiding like a thief from everybody. The priest is available. You can go and confess to the priest that this is happening. And he is perfectly happy. He says, you are forgiven. I will pray for you to God. Now put $10 into the donation box. And 5 Hail Marys. And you are free of sin. Great. First they create the guilt, then they make the arrangement for removing the guilt. And it is worth $10. But now you have found a way. You can have as many love affairs with anybody's wife, no worry, just $10. This is a very subtle exploitation of man. I have told you in a small school, the teacher was telling about Jesus as the greatest man of history. For half an hour or more, she talked about Jesus around and around, did not make exactly the pronouncement that he is the greatest man of history, but all her arguments pointed to the statement. Then finally she asked a small boy stand up. He was American. He said, "Abraham Lincoln." She was shocked. She said, "It is good, but not perfect. Sit down." She asked another boy, he said, "Winston Churchill." She said, "Not bad, but not right either. Just sit down." And that way she went around. It was an international school, so everybody was talking about, somebody about Lenin, somebody about Mao Zedong, somebody about Mahatma Gandhi. She was puzzled. She has been talking about Jesus and nobody is answering about Jesus. Then finally she came towards a small boy, Jewish. She was worried that he will say Moses, but you know Jews. The little boy stood up and said, "Jesus Christ." She said, "Absolutely perfect." But she was puzzled a little that this boy is Jew. So after the class, she picked the boy, took her by the side and asked him, "Are not you a Jew?" He said, "Yes, I am a Jew." "Then why you said that Jesus Christ is the greatest man of history?" He said, "In the heart of my heart, I know Moses is the greatest man of history. But business is business." All the religions, all the societies are corrupting people. So when you come here and find no corruption and find no morality and find no puritanism and find absolute acceptance as you are, nobody interferes in your lifestyle, you feel good but a little confused. You are coming from a world which has been guiding you on every step. Do you know that Gautam Buddha's scriptures have 33 million principles for the Buddhist monk? Even to remember them is impossible. 33 million principles, every detail of life, the smallest detail of life is determined. You have to follow it, otherwise you are guilty. You can have only 3 pieces of clothes. It may be very cold winter and you need something warmer. But that is not according to the principles. Because all woolen things come from the hairs of animals, while taking those hairs from the animals, you are hurting those animals and you are leaving them without hair in winter, because only in winter those hairs grow to protect them from the cold. All the year round, they don't care about hairs, but hairs grow only just as winter starts coming closer. Hairs become thicker. It is a natural protection for poor animals, and you are cutting their hairs exactly in the middle of the winter when they are the biggest and the best. And you are leaving them without hairs in the cold winters of the mountains, in the Himalayas where snow is falling. Buddha prohibited. You should not use any woolen clothes. Now, minute details. You cannot have 2 baths every day. That is luxurious. You should not eat in the night, and you should not drink in the night. Night, all animals sleep, all trees sleep, you should sleep. Only between sunrise and sunset you can eat, and only 1 time. Smallest details, you should not wear shoes, because they were made in those days only of animals' skin. It was violent. So in the hot summer, the followers of Buddha will be walking naked feet on the burning earth. They could not have even an umbrella. In the rains, they were soaking with rains. In the hot summer, they cannot have the umbrella, because that is a luxury. And it is not that Buddha is the most ascetic. According to Mahavira, he is living in luxury, because 3 pieces of clothes. Mahavira lived naked. This is real asceticism. Buddha is a luxurious fellow, having 3 pieces of clothes. It is all relative. What is luxurious and what is not? Having 2 meals a day is luxurious. Not for the Americans, which are having at least 5 meals per day and tea break and coffee break and ice cream break and Coca-Cola break. The American doing only one thing, watching the television and swallowing all kinds of junk, getting fatter and fatter and fatter, and the ultimate result, he is taken to the hospital. 30 million people are in the hospitals just because they are too fat and it is dangerous to their heart. They are suffering very badly. They want to go home. They are missing the fridge. Only the American misses the fridge. Other people misses other things, wife, children, house, garden. The American misses the fridge. Even in the night, he will get up one or two times. That is normal. I'm not talking about abnormal people. And almost asleep, he will move directly to the fridge. A man was told by his psychoanalyst, because he was complaining that his wife is becoming fatter and fatter and fatter, now she simply sits and watches television and goes on eating. It is disgusting to see her. I remain late in the office unnecessarily. I go to the pub unnecessarily just not to see the face of that woman. Late in the night, drunk completely, I return. You have to do something. He said, you do one thing. Take this beautiful naked picture of a woman, absolutely proportionate, could have won the world competition for beauty. You take this and you paste it inside the fridge. So whenever your wife will open the fridge, she will see the beautiful woman and she will see herself just a bag. No corners, no slopes, no high peak points, nothing. She will become jealous of this picture and she will start dieting. He said, perfectly right, it seems logical. On the way home, he looked at the picture. He said, my God, what a woman. He went and pasted the picture. After 6 months, the psychiatrist met him on the sea beach. He could not believe, as if somebody has puffed air into him. He has become a balloon. The psychiatrist said, what happened? He said, everything backfired. My wife does not care a bit about that bitch you have given to me. But I fell in love with the picture. So whenever I have any time, I immediately run to the fridge to see the picture. But when you are seeing the picture, you also see the ice cream. So because of that picture, this is my situation. My wife is the same, but you ditched me. You are responsible. The psychiatrist said, I had never thought that this will happen. Now, it is beyond psychiatry, you get hospitalized. He said, I cannot lose my fridge and my beloved's photograph. She has become his beloved. According to Buddha, these people will be thought monsters. But in America it is average. 7.5 hours television is average. And what you will do sitting in the chair? The mouth also needs to move. A little exercise. Not to get disturbed, because if you go to the fridge, you will miss something on the television, and it is all rubbish. 50% is advertisement. Other 50% is just to allure you to keep watching to see the advertisement. And what is advertising? They are advertising more food, better ice cream, the whole country is getting insane. Food seems to be God. In fact, in the Hindu scriptures, food is called God. But it was because people were so poor, starving, that food was God. Not American style. But America has made food the gods. Eat, drink, be merry. For the first time, the whole country is living a hedonistic life. Buddha would have condemned it totally. Who is right? If this is the only life, and there is no life after death, then perhaps the American is right, and Buddha is wrong. If this is the only life, then why not eat, drink, be merry? There is nothing else. But Buddha is not wrong. There have been lives before and there are going to be lives afterwards. Now even a new branch of psychology, parapsychology, is investigating all over the world in many universities. and finding valid evidence of past lives and possibilities of future lives. If there have been past lives, that makes it certain that you will have future lives. People are remembering under hypnosis many lives in the past. And it is not imagination. Because you hypnotize them second time and they will remember the same things. It is not dreaming. You cannot repeat a dream. It is not under your will. And if it was only remembering, that would not be so great an achievement. The East has always talked about it, has methods how to remember it. Not only remember, but how to live it again. Parapsychologists are interested that when a person goes backwards and remembers past lives, many of his sicknesses, psychological tensions, anxieties disappear. They belong to his past life which he has carried. And unless you go to the very roots, you cannot cut the tree. And once he remembers from where this anxiety comes, he simply starts laughing. It is an anxiety about a woman he was married in the past life. She tortured him, and that memory is still carried in his mind. Because of this memory, he cannot see to his own wife. That memory comes between. He is afraid. He is afraid of women. Once he finds it, he starts laughing and giggling that this is nonsense. That was another woman and that is finished. Suddenly all anxiety disappears. For the first time he looks at his wife as she is. That old film of the past life is no more a hindrance. Parapsychology is going to be of great importance in future. When psychoanalysis and psychology will be dead, parapsychology will be of immense help to humanity. We are doing everything here under hypnosis to take you backwards in time. If you can go completely to thousands of lives, all your psychological problems will disappear and meditation will be just so simple that you close your eyes and you have reached to the center. Because we are trying to reach to the center of your very being, this is your home. Once you have come in contact with me, no teacher, no learned scholar is going to satisfy you. And you will not find a man who is not only contemporary to you, but almost one century ahead. I will remain relevant for at least one century. Now the sutra. The sutra is long and the night is short. I hope that I will be able to finish it before sunrise. When the novice monk Gao first called on Yakusan, Yakusan asked him, "Where do you come from?" This question is asked again and again and again. Where do you come from? It does not refer to the place, it refers to the space. It refers to your ultimate home. From where you have come. Gao said, from non-you, the name of his village. He could not understand. He was a newcomer. He had no idea why Zen masters ask, where do you come from? They are asking, have you meditated? Have you been to the center of your being? Have you looked beyond the center, the eternal space from where you are coming? It is asking in a very roundabout way, are you a meditator? Have you found the center of your being, your Buddha? But they don't ask that way. They ask a simple question. Now, that answer of the novice will decide for the master from where to begin. He said, from non-you. Yakusan asked, where are you going? That is another question of the same category. If you know where are you going, you will know simultaneously from where you are coming. Because it is the same place from where we come and to where we go. It is a complete circle. The same point is reached again. The same eternity, the same cosmos. A tidal wave arises in the ocean. From where it is coming? And soon it disperses back in the ocean. The source of your coming and the source of your going is absolutely the same. Because the first question failed, the newcomer could not understand it. Yakusan asked, where are you going? If you don't know from where you are coming, at least you must know where are you going. Gao replied, the jingling to receive the precepts. Jingling was a kind of an university. where great scholars translated Buddhist scriptures from China and India. It was the most famous learned place. So he said, I am going to Jingling to receive the precepts, the teachings of the Buddha. Yaku-san then asked, what is the aim of receiving precepts? What you will do with the precepts? You can learn all the scriptures, but that will not make you wise. On the contrary, it will make you more egoistic and more ignorant. What are you going to do by receiving precepts? Zen is not concerned with knowledge at all. One Zen master burnt all the Buddhist scriptures. And he worshipped Buddha. And he loved Buddha. And he has become enlightened as a heritage of Buddha. But he burned all scriptures after his enlightenment, because he saw, these scriptures have been hindering me for years. I would have become enlightened any time. But because of these scriptures, I was repeating words, cramming theorizations, filling myself with great philosophy, and that was becoming a great China wall, very difficult to pass beyond it. When he became enlightened under a master, his first thing was to burn all the scriptures. That does not mean he is disrespectful to Buddha, because the next day morning he was dancing before the Buddha statue. His master said, but you have burned the scriptures. He said, yes, I have burned the scriptures because I have realized the truth of Buddha. It is not in the scriptures, it is in me. And in deep gratitude, I am dancing before his statue. One Zen monk burnt down Buddha's wooden statues because the night was too cold. And the priest came and said, are you insane? He said, maybe. But the night is too cold. And you have got two Buddhas more in your temple. Just I have taken one. Be compassionate enough. Bring at least one more, because still there is long night ahead and it is becoming colder. The priest said, I thought you are a great master, that's why I allowed you to stay in the night in the temple. I had never thought in my dreams that a great master will do such a thing. You have burnt my most precious Buddha. It was made of sandalwood. The master took his staff and started searching in the ashes of the burnt Buddha, The priest said, "What are you doing now?" He said, "I am looking for his bones." He said, "My God, you are really mad. It is a wooden statue. It does not have any bones." He said, "That's what I was saying. It is not Buddha. It is just a wooden replica. You just bring another statue. None of your statues are Buddhas. They are just wooden sculptures. Bring, the night is too cold, and a living Buddha is ordering you." The priest thought that this man is going to burn the whole temple. He pushed him out of the doors, closed the door. The master said, "Listen, you will repent later on. You are throwing out the living Buddha for the wooden statues. But it is okay. In the morning, see you." No anger, no feeling of humiliation. In the morning, when the priest opened the door, he opened them very cautiously, looking where that madman is sitting. He was not there, so he opened the doors, and then he saw him sitting on the other side of the road. There was a milestone, and he has collected few wild flowers, and he has put on the milestone, and he was in his morning worship. Buddham saranam gacchami. The priest said, "What kind of man he is? In the night he burnt the Buddha, and now before a milestone, he is saying, 'I come to the feet of the Buddha.'" He went close to him, but he did not look at him. He was in deep meditation, in deep serenity. As the sun was rising, something inside of him was becoming more and more lighter. When he opened his eyes, the priest looked into his eyes. He has never seen such beauty, such depth. He had never seen such silence, such grace. Perhaps he has done wrong. He touched the feet of the master. The master said, "I have told you beforehand that you will repent. You are throwing a living Buddha out of the temple and preserving the wooden Buddhas." Zen is very straightforward. Neither statues can help, nor scriptures can help. The only thing that can help is going deeper into yourself, realizing the inner sky and the freedom that comes with it, and the fragrance of the beyond. The master asked, "What is the aim of receiving precepts? What are you going to do when you become learned? When you have received all the teachings of Buddha, what you are going to do? What is the goal?" Gao answered, "To escape birth and death." He must have heard about it, that these Buddhists are trying to get out of the circle of birth and death. And obviously, Most of the people live life in such a way that it creates more and more misery. The whole programming of humanity is for misery. So one starts thinking how to get out of the circle of birth and death. That is not really going to help. You have to learn how to get out of the programming the society has given to you. Once you are out of that programming, you are out of birth and death and the so-called circle. But feeling miserable, he may have thought, it is better to get out of birth and death. Yakusan said, there is someone who does not receive the precepts and has no birth and death to escape. Do you know? He is indicating towards his inner Buddha. There is someone who does not receive the precepts and has no birth and death to escape. Do you know him? Gao asked, then what is the use of the Buddha's precepts? He missed the point again. The master was very clear. Rarely Zen masters are so clear. But seeing that the man is a beginner, Yakusan must have been very clear, uncomplicated. He has said exactly, there is someone who does not receive the precepts and has no birth and death to escape. Do you know him? He is simply asking, do you know yourself? Do you know someone inside you which needs no knowledge, which needs no escape from birth and death, which is already beyond, which has never been born and which has never died, and it needs no knowledge from the precepts. It knows directly the existence itself. But he could not understand. Gao asked, then what is the use of the Buddha's precepts? He started arguing, that is almost the case with the newcomers. They think they can argue with the master. They don't know a thing, but their mind is full of junk and all kinds of arguments and theories and creeds. He started arguing without listening what the master has said. His argument was, if there is someone who does not need the precepts and who does not need to get out of the circle of birth and death, then what is the use of the Buddha's precepts? Looks logical, rational, but only to those who don't know meditation, only to those who know only the mind. Yakusan said, this novice still has lips and teeth. Lips to speak, teeth to bite. He does not understand anything, but at least he has lips which move, and he has teeth to bite in argument At this, the novice bowed and withdrew. Thus, bowing down has become ritual in Japan. He has not understood anything. He has wasted the time of the master. His bowing down has no gratitude in it. It is simply a formality. Just as you shake hands, not with love and warmth. Have you watched people shaking hands? Different hands give different messages. Some hands are so cold, as if you are holding a dead branch of a tree. Nothing moves from those hands. Some hands are so warm and loving that you can feel a tinkling. Some energy is moving in you. They are ready to share. And there are hands which suck your energy. After holding their hand, you will feel a strange weakness coming over you. In Japan, bowing down has become a ritual. It has lost the beauty of gratitude. I have seen it happen for almost 15 years now, since the Westerners started coming to me. The Indians may touch the feet, but very rarely as gratitude, most often just a formality. Thousands of people have touched my feet, and I have been watching the subtle nuances, the differences of their energies. Most of them had no gratitude, nothing. It was just a routine thing in India. When the Westerners started coming to me, it is not a routine in the West. In fact, the whole Western culture and the educational system teaches you pride, ego. It is against touching somebody's feet. So when the Westerners were here, it was very difficult for them to touch the feet. Just as it was very easy for the Indians to touch the feet. Very rarely an Indian touched the feet with gratitude. But when the Westerner felt the gratitude arising in him, his touching the feet was more authentic. It was not formality. It was not a built-in program in his mind. In fact, he himself was taken aback what he is doing. Against his whole education, against his whole culture, he is touching the feet. But when you come across a person, you feel gratitude, there is no way. There is no other way to express it. This novice did not understand anything but bowed down and withdrew. Dogo then came forward and stood by Yaku-san, who said to him, "That limping novice who just came, after all, has some life in him." Dogo said, "He is not to be entirely believed yet. You should test him again first." The master said, "He may not have understood me, that is not the problem, he is a new man. But one thing is certain, that limping novice who just came, after all, has some life in him. He has come from so far away. Although he knows nothing, he could not understand a word, but still he has some life." Dogo, his old disciple, said, "He is not to be entirely believed yet. You should test him again first." When evening came, Yaku-san went up to into the hall. He called, "Where is the novice who came earlier?" Gao then came forward from the assembly and stood there. And Yaku-san said to him, "I hear that Chang'an is very noisy." The place he was coming from is a marketplace, very noisy. Gao said, "My province is peaceful." When he said, "My province is very peaceful," he is saying, my inner territory is very peaceful. It does not matter that the place I come from is very noisy. The noise is just outside. Inside, my space is very peaceful. Yaku-san asked with much joy, "Did you realize this from reading scriptures or from making inquiries?" To which Gao replied, "I did not get it from reading scriptures or from making inquiries." Yaku-san said, "Many people do not read scriptures or make inquiries. Why don't they get it?" Gao said, "I don't say they don't get it. It is just that they don't agree to take it up. Why not so many people become Buddhas? If everybody is intrinsically a Buddha, just because you are too much occupied in other things, perhaps the thirst has not arisen, perhaps you are afraid to become a Buddha. In these insane crowds, to become a Buddha is taking a great risk." Gao said, "I don't say they don't get it. It is just that they don't agree to take it up." The master was delighted. Although the novice has not understood him when he has told him, but he must have meditated over it, tried to find what the master was saying, why I missed it. By the evening, he was a totally different person. In the morning, he has come as a newcomer. By the evening, he has become an old disciple, very ancient disciple. His answers saw a tremendous transformation. Just in one day, it can happen in 1 minute, it can happen in 1 second, it can happen in a split second. It is only a question, how intense is your effort to reach to your center? He must have felt deeply the sadness that he came across a master and missed him, and he must have felt utterly stupid that he started arguing with the master. He cleaned himself just in one day, and by the evening, when the master made inquiries, he was almost a different person. The master was very much delighted. Such seekers are needed in the world. These are the people. Who can rise to the ultimate heights? I know you are here with an intense urgency. And this intense urgency makes me delighted. Your spring is not far away. Soon you will be full of spiritual blossoms. Your potentiality will come to its actualization. You will see yourself as a Buddha. It is not a question of believing. I am absolutely against belief. I am a scientist of the subjective world. Just as science does not allow belief, but inquiry, investigation in the objective world, I am a scientist of the subjective world. I don't allow any belief, but inquiry, search. And if you have the thirst, there is no need to wait before sunrise. Your enlightenment can be complete. Kayo Rai wrote, whatever happens, not talking about it makes for peace. Kayo Rai was not only a poet, but also a master. What he is saying, whatever happens, not talking about it, makes for peace. He is talking about his own commune. I have been asked again and again, that I declare people enlightened only when they die. This is simply to keep the peace of the commune. If I declare somebody to be enlightened, you will kill him. You will not be able to tolerate that this man has become enlightened. You will find 1,000 faults in him. You will condemn him. And you will be very jealous. I have made it a point that I will declare people only enlightened when you cannot be jealous and you cannot quarrel. They are already gone. And when I leave the world, I will leave a note about the people who are enlightened, but in deep secrecy, the note will remain with Nirvana. So whenever somebody dies out of the list, declare, because declaring anybody enlightened while he is alive is certainly going to create great trouble. For the man who is declared enlightened, now he will feel very much embarrassed smoking cigarettes. And what to do with the girlfriends? Enlightened? And you have a girlfriend? Only Sardar Gurdayal Singh is an exception. But ordinarily, you will feel very much in difficulty drinking wine, going to the pub, even just ordinary beer. And particularly my Germans. What they will do without the beer? For Germans, I will have to make an exception. I don't want you to be embarrassed. It is good that you are trying to be enlightened. On the way, enjoy everything. And I will declare you enlightened when you are completely at rest in the grave. Nobody can disturb you. No beer, no cigarettes, no girlfriends, nothing. At the most, you can toss and turn inside. If you want, I can put in every grave some chewing gum. So whenever you feel too much upset, just start chewing gum. Whatever is right, whatever happens, Not talking about it makes for peace. And I want my commune to be absolutely peaceful. Manisha has asked a question. It seems some people consider unconditional trust in one's master to be fanaticism. Would you explain the difference between the two? Manisha, the difference is very small, but of immense importance. If the unconditional trust in one's master arises in you, unasked, undemanded, it is a totally different matter. But if the master demands that you surrender to me unconditionally, then in the first place he is not a master. In the second place, if you surrender to such a man, you are surrendering into slavery. And when surrendering comes out of love and trust arises out of your experience, nobody is asking it. It is simply something that is growing within you. Then it is authentic. And it does not bring spiritual slavery, it brings spiritual freedom. So the difference is small, but the implications are immense. Never surrender to anyone who asks, because only a man ask for surrender and trust who does not trust himself and his enlightenment. A man who knows himself, his ultimate peaks, knows someday you will see those peaks. Someday you will feel the tremendous pull. With your growth will come gratitude, trust, love. And when love grows into surrender, unasked, undemanded, it has a beauty of its own. It is time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh. Mrs. Maggie McTavish runs into her old friend Dora McPherson after a long time. Ah, Dora, I have not seen you for years. What is new? Asks Maggie. Well, says Dora, I got married since I last saw you, Maggie. Married, are you? Really? Ask Maggie, that's fine. Not so fine, says Dora. He was a son of a bitch. Married to a son of a bitch? Ask Maggie, that's bad. Not so bad, replies Dora. He had parts of money. Money? A husband with money? Ask Maggie, that's fine. Ah, not so fine, replies Dora. He was tied with it. A husband with money and tied with it? Asks Maggie. That's bad. Ah, not so bad, replies Dora. He built us a house. A house? With his money? Asks Maggie. That's fine. Ah, not so fine, explains Dora. The house burnt down. Burnt down? Asks Maggie. That is bad for sure. Ah, not so bad, replies Dora. He was in it. Two French chefs are exploring through darkest Africa, looking for some special wild herbs, the jungle, for their restaurant in Paris. Just as they enter the deepest, thickest forest, they find their magic herbs, but immediately get captured by Chief Bonga and his cannibal tribe. The two French chefs are carried to the village among loud drums, singing and dancing, and there they are tied to stakes. The whole tribe gathers to view their new imported dinner. As cannibal chef spoon em out, starts the fire under the cooking pots, just then a crazed cannibal comes dancing wildly out of the crowd. He sways and swirls around the two Frenchmen who are tied to the stake. Suddenly the drums stop. A deathly hush falls over the village, and the wild man speaks to the two white men. You are French, are you not? He asks. Oui, oui. They reply in unison. Good, they tell me. Then tell me, says the wild man, what are your names? I am Pierre Souffle, says one Frenchman. And this is my friend Crepe Suzette. But why do you want to know our names? Can you help us? Ah, no, replies the wild man. But now I know what to write on the menu. It is that fateful day on Calvary Hill. Jesus is hanging on his wooden cross, 20 feet off the ground, utterly exhausted. To his left side, hanging on another cross, is thief Barnabé, cousin brother of the famous murderer and rapist Barabbas. On the right side of Jesus, hanging in the air, is Fritz the Hoon, great grandfather of the infamous Attila. The sun is beating down, there are no clouds or God in sight. As Jesus becomes more and more delirious, suddenly Jesus twitches on the cross and mumbles towards Barnabé, my son, come closer. Varanvi looks up at Jesus and wiggles around a bit, but finds himself stuck. Jesus lifts his head weakly and looks at Fritz. My son, he grasps, come closer. Fritz is completely spaced out and does not move. My sons, cries Jesus in frustration, come closer, come closer. But all is still on Calvary Hill. Okay then, sighs Jesus, it is your own fault if you don't want to be in the photograph. Close your eyes. Feel your bodies to be completely frozen. This is the right moment to look inwards. Gather your whole life energy, your total consciousness, and with an urgency, as if this is going to be your last moment on the earth. With this urgency, rush towards the center of your being. Closer you come to the center, closer you are to yourself. Closer you come to the center, closer you are to your intrinsic Buddha. Silence deepens, a tremendous peace arises in you. A rain shower of blessings, flowers of unknown mysteries, as you reach to the center, you for the first time encounter yourself in a mirror. The mirror has never gathered any dust. This moment, you are the most fortunate people on the earth. This inner world and the search of the Buddha People have completely forgotten. Remember the Buddha has only one quality, that of witnessing. Witness, you are not the body. Witness, you are not the mind. Witness, you are not the astral or the subtle bodies. Witness that you are only a witness. Everything surrounds you, but nothing touches you. You are beyond of everything. This beyondness is your Buddhahood. This beyondness opens the door to the cosmos. First, I want you to be established as a Buddha. Then the second step is very easy. Any day I can tell you to jump into the cosmos. The first step is more important. Once you are a Buddha, the second step is very simple. Again, I say to you, remember only one quality is your very being, and that is witnessing. That is your eternal quality. Never born, never dies. It is always here and now. It has no beginning, no end. It is one with the whole existence. To make it clear, Nivedana, relax, let go, but go on remembering you are only a witness. Whatever happens, whatever experiences arise in you, a tremendous ecstasy is possible. You may feel almost drunk, but keep aloof. A watcher on the hills, just witnessing. And slowly, slowly, your separation starts melting like ice. Gautam the Buddha auditorium is becoming an ocean of consciousness without any ripples. Such peace, such grandeur, such splendor, and you have been missing it for mundane things. This is your real world. This is your truth, this is your beauty, and this is your godliness. The Buddha is another name of all these beauty, truth, godliness. Before Nivedana calls you back, do two things. First, gather as much peace, as much fragrance of the beyond. You have to bring it with you. Don't come empty-handed. And second, persuade the Buddha. He has lived too long hidden at the center. He is your very nature. He has to be brought into your daily activities. Walking, sitting, sleeping, he has to be with you, just like your heart beat, just like your breathing. He is your ultimate breathing, the ultimate heartbeat of the universe. If you persuade, he will come. He has been waiting for you for centuries. But he will not come with you unless you persuade him, unless you welcome him into your ordinary, simple life activities. In your words, in your gestures, in your silences, in your songs, in your dances, let him be an inner participant. Slowly, slowly, you will disappear in him and he will become a solid reality in the world. That day is the most fortunate day in one's life. You are all on the right path. I hope you will all be fulfilled. Not only fulfilled, you will overflow with joy and bliss and benediction for the whole world. Nivedana, come back, but remember not to forget that you are a Buddha, not to forget witnessing. With great silence and peace, sit down for a few moments just to remember and recollect the golden path you have traveled, the tremendous silence at the center of your being, and the grace of the Buddha who has come closer is just behind you. He is now almost like a shadow, but ultimately he will become the reality and you will become the shadow. That is the moment of enlightenment. I call this straight to the point of enlightenment.